Handling venomous snakes is a daunting task. With every encounter, there is, of course, a risk. So why in 1991 was a room full of people passing these deadly creatures around? Well, according to them, handling these serpent demons and surviving was God willing them to live and a testament of their faith. This gathering of individuals was part of the Church of Jesus Signs Following in Alabama. Amongst practicing the handling of deadly snakes, they also believe in the healing of touch and casting out demons. Although there are laws around this kind of practice, it still goes on. In October of that year, the preacher of this church, his wife, was bitten twice by a deadly snake belonging to the church, and she was left to suffer a slow, painful death. Was this God's will? Or someone's sinister attempt at murder? Let's talk true crime. Hello and welcome to Hell No, a true crime podcast with your host, Lauren Lucio. Today we are going to be talking about a serpent church in Alabama that was thrust into the spotlight in the early 90s for more than just handling deadly snakes. When I came across this case and I saw that people were willfully handling deadly snakes, I just had to take a closer look at what was going on here. I had heard of serpent churches before, but I had no idea there was a true crime case with one at the center of it. Firstly, I'm sure we've all heard of serpent churches, but what is it? What is it? Where did it come from? What's going on here? Well, according to the internet, serpent churches have been around a while, but they're pretty niche. Here's what I learned. It is a denomination of Christianity. However, like I said, it is niche. Not all Christians support the serpent church's practices. They don't support their interpretations of scripture. And a lot of Christians don't associate with serpent churches. So I just want to say that right now. It is a denomination of Christianity, but not all Christians support this. Serpent churches are a subset of Pentecostalism referred to as signs following churches. Apparently, this offshoot started around 1909 in Tennessee by founder George Went Hensley, and it gained traction in Alabama, Kentucky, and Georgia. By the way, BTW, George Went Hensley, he died in 1955. How do you think he died? From being bit by a venomous snake. Yes. Yep. So that is an entirely different topic all on its own. Not even going to touch that right now. But the guy who started these serpent handling churches, yeah, he got bit by one of his venomous snakes and he died. So I guess people in the church would believe that it was God's will, that it was his time to go. So that's, you know, and if you do get bit and you don't die, then that's God saying, hey, it's not your time. You're not going to die from this, is what I could gather the belief around this is. And if you don't get bit at all, you're saying, hey, God, I have faith in you. And God's saying, right on. Thank you for the faith. You will not be bit by a venomous snake today. Okay. When researching this church, the same Bible passage kept popping up over and over and over again in relation to signs following. And that is a verse from the New Testament, Mark 16:18, quote, "And these signs shall follow them that believe. In my name shall they cast out devils. They shall speak with new tongues. They shall take up serpents. And if they drink any deadly thing, it shall not hurt them. They shall lay hands on the sick and they shall recover," unquote. Signs following takes this literally. Within their practice, it is believed that God will protect them if they have faith. The fact they use snakes is also significant to the Bible. I watched some videos that were recorded inside churches that practice these beliefs, and it was mesmerizing. Absolutely mesmerizing. People were dancing around with rattlesnakes, passing them around, singing, speaking in tongues, casting out demons, healing people with touch. It was very lively, and you can see how someone could get swept up in this atmosphere. The bits that I saw were loaded with energy and passion and a strong sense of a higher power. Some members say the feeling is incredible when you hold these venomous snakes and survive because of God's will. It seems they feel untouchable. They feel like God wants me to live and I shall, and I'm going to test this by playing with wild venomous snakes, because a lot of these snakes, they just catch right in the bush and they bring them in the church. And, you know, they do keep some, but I did hear that the ones they keep in boxes, they tend sometimes, I'm not saying all, but in the documentary I watched, which I'll talk about later, they were saying that the snakes kept in captivity, because they catch them in the wild, they keep them or breed them in captivity, they're not as lively. They don't move around as much because they could be sick or whatever reason. Maybe they're getting used to people. I don't know. So they do have both. They have ones that they keep in boxes. Perhaps they've bred in captivity or have been in captivity in a while, but then they'll also go get fresh wild ones and do it and handle them and hand them around in the church. Now, they don't have to touch the snake. It's not like, oh, you have to touch the snake if you're in a serpent. No, you don't have to. They're not forced to touch a snake, but it is a big part of the practice, and quite a few people do this. So I'm not here to say what's right and what's wrong. That's not up to me. But the laws in many of these states, there are laws that forbid this type of worship because of how dangerous it is. The followers of this practice, they have been known to even drink strychnine and electrocute themselves with the belief that, you know, God will not let these dangers harm them. I'm not sure how many people have been injured or even died during these practices, but I did read people have. I read 150 people have died, and it's estimated that there are more people that have died. So it is very dangerous, and many members, they're, you know, upon being bitten or drinking this strychnine and feeling unwell and maybe dying, they don't really want to seek medical intervention because it's God's will if they live or if they die. And depending on how they've been injured, if what they've drank, what they've been bit by, they could have 2 hours to 48 hours to 72 hours of a slow, painful, agonizing death. And it's scary. It's really scary. It's risky. And that's why there are laws put in place that prevent signs following from practicing. I believe it was everywhere, but where was it? West Virginia. Everywhere but West Virginia has laws against this. Some of them practice in secret. Some of them, maybe they get a special license for handling snakes that only licensed members can handle. I'm not sure, but this practice does still go on, and, you know, the risk is still very relevant. With that being said, it is in America's First Amendment that Americans are allowed to practice their religion. So you can see why there's a lot of controversy around this way of worship and whether or not it can and should be done. It is their right, but it is dangerous, which makes it against the law because people are harmed and even killed. Now that we know a little bit, a very little bit about signs following and how they practice, we can now talk about the case, because you have to really know what is surrounding this case. So Scottsboro, Alabama, 1991, 47-year-old Glenn Summerford and his 36-year-old wife, Darlene, are not only active members of the Church of Jesus Signs Following, but Glenn is the preacher of the church. And just another side note going into this, there seem to be two names for what seems like the same practice. One is the Church of God Signs Following, and the other, which Glenn is the preacher for, this one church, it's called the Church of Jesus Signs Following. So they're both signs following. And from what I could find, they're very similar, and I didn't find any significant differences between the two aside from the name. So Glenn, he had not always been a man of the church, but after he married Darlene in 1974 and they had a son, he said he found God after spending 30 days in the bush. He went into the woods alone with a Bible, and he read this Bible for 30 days alone out there. It was like, I think he found a cave, and he went in this cave, and he fasted, and he read the Bible, and apparently he came out of the woods a new man. He was a new man. Previously, Glenn was known for fighting and drinking, but he wanted desperately to change, and he claimed he found his way. These 30 days had changed him. Before he and Darlene married in 1974, he had already been married to a woman named Doris in 1964. And by the way, when he married Darlene, he had yet to divorce Doris. That's right. No divorce had gone through before Glenn married Darlene. Doris, his first wife, said that she was afraid of him and that Glenn's character became worse when they were married after losing one of their children to a house fire, which that is just an absolutely devastating part of their lives. Glenn seemed to be haunted by that night and that he couldn't pull his baby girl from the burning house. The rest of the children made it out alive along with him and Doris. Unfortunately, they could not get their youngest daughter out. After this, Glenn drank more and more, and Doris, she feared him more and more. He already had a hot temper. He had a mean streak in him, and he liked to drink. So I could just imagine when he drank, he got meaner, and the more he drank, the meaner he got. And he was very good at fighting, unfortunately. Violence didn't seem to be something he shied away from. It seemed to be something he was almost drawn to. He was so good at fighting that he would actually fight for money in these, I guess you could call them underground fighting rings, like illegal fights. It was said that during one particular fight, he caused significant damage to his opponent to the point it caused people to have very strong feelings against Glenn. It was absolutely horrific. One theory is that it was these people who weren't happy with Glenn in this absolutely savagery he displayed in this fight against his opponent, that the people who were angry about this had something to do with that house fire that killed Glenn's baby girl. That's speculation, though. Nobody was ever charged with arson or with the murder of his daughter. Glenn, he had learned to fight at a young age from his stepfather. And as he grew older, this got him into a lot of trouble fighting because he was arrested for violent acts such as assault. By the time Glenn and Darlene married in 1974, Glenn was rethinking his path in life and he found religion. And for whatever reason, he became so dedicated that Glenn himself became the preacher of the Church of Jesus, Signs Following. Glenn's son said that Glenn did change his ways after emerging from his 30 days in that cave in the woods with his Bible fasting. His father, who was once angry and drank a lot, was now sober. He was even tempered. He was praying all day, every day. And his son said it was like someone had taken over his father's body. Like, it wasn't him in there anymore. It was somebody else. It was someone who didn't drink. It was someone who wasn't violent. It was somebody who prayed all the time. For a while, Glenn spent a lot of his time praying. He stayed sober and he was leading the church. He casted demons out of people and he healed them with his touch. There was one story that Glenn had laid his hands upon an elderly woman who hadn't walked in 20 years. And after his touch, she got up and ran around the church. Oh yeah, there was quite a few of these stories. There was so many incredible stories with Glenn at the heart of them, which is why when an ambulance picked up Darlene in October of 1991 and she told them a horrific story, it was hard for the members of their church to believe her. Some still do not. To this very day, there are many who don't believe Darlene's story. October 4th, 1991, emergency services get a phone call. The paramedics head out to a dark road called Barbie Lane. The information they are given is that someone has been bit by a snake. It was seeming like a routine call, but something a bit strange happened the closer they got to the call site. They were instructed to basically not make any noise or be seen. So they were like, hey, when you get close, when you get on this lane, you have to turn your lights off. Don't have your sirens on. And they're thinking, okay, so they oblige this. They turn off their lights. They turn off their sirens. And they're just creeping down this dark road in Alabama. Suddenly, on this dark, desolate road, they see a woman stumbling and walking towards the ambulance. The paramedics get closer and they can see the flesh on her hand appears to be rotting. They found their snake bite victim, but this did not look like any bite they had ever attended to. Why was this woman on a dark road at night with an advanced snake bite on her hand, though? And why did they have to be silent and turn their lights off? They didn't have time to think about those things, as this woman needed a hospital immediately, which is where they went. So they pick her up. They're like, holy, we gotta get to the hospital. So they get to the hospital. Unfortunately, the paramedics in the ambulance, they had no anti-venom for snake bites, and neither did the small town hospital they brought her to. So the woman was rushed to a larger hospital in Birmingham. Eventually, this woman starts filling in the questions the paramedics have. The woman in their ambulance who's being rushed to the Birmingham hospital is Darlene Summerford, the wife of Glenn Summerford, the preacher of a serpent church. Darlene tells them that her husband forced her hand into a rattlesnake cage, not once, but twice, and he did it by holding a gun to her head. She said she had no choice but to suffer the venomous bites. She even went into detail saying how her husband hit the cage that the snakes were kept in with some type of pole or a stick to ensure the snakes were agitated so that they would indeed bite her. Darlene makes it to the Birmingham hospital where she is treated, and she does recover, but there is so much more to this story. Police must investigate, as this is sounding a lot like attempted murder. Police go over to the Summerford residence to search the property, and sure enough, they find many venomous snakes being kept in a shed out back. They find 16 venomous snakes in total. Most of those are rattlesnakes. Darlene had been bit by a rattlesnake, so every single snake had to be collected by the police officers, which was no easy task. Police are like, Glenn, why the fuck do you have all these snakes? And he tells them that it's part of his religious practice. He says, I'm the preacher of the Church of Jesus Signs Following. Glenn cooperated with police the entire time and allowed them to search the property without putting up any fight. He even unlocked the shed for them that the snakes were kept in. He was not acting like he had anything to hide. Police searched the home as well, and they could tell that domestic chores were not routinely carried out. In fact, it was very hard for them to surmise if a dispute had happened in there or not, because it was so messy. The home was so messy that they even found a raccoon living in a bag on the wall. In some sources, it says that this was their pet. This was Glenn and Darlene's pet that lived in the house. So they had a raccoon that was just free range in this house. In a documentary called Alabama Snake I watched about this case, they show actual footage of the home while they're conducting the search, and there's dirty dishes, garbage, buckets, stuff like that everywhere. Chairs are knocked over, and it's clear that this is not a orderly household. There could potentially be something wrong in this home. Given that police found many venomous snakes on the property and that Darlene is claiming Glenn forced her to get bit by one of them, not once but twice, he is then arrested for attempted murder. This is no open and shut case, though, as Glenn and Darlene are telling very different stories of what happened that night, and it is up to a jury to decide who they believe and what they believe to be the truth. This is Darlene's side of the story. This is what she testified in court. Darlene says that Glenn and her were fighting because he was accusing her of having an affair with another preacher. She denies any affair on her part and believes Glenn was the one having the affair. During this argument, Glenn lost it and forced Darlene at gunpoint out into the shed that held the snakes. As he held the gun to Darlene's head, he instructed her to stick her hand in the cage that held a large, poisonous diamondback rattlesnake. It's hard to say what was running through Darlene's head while this was happening, but if I were to guess, I would say she was thinking that if she denied Glenn's request, then he would shoot her and she could potentially be dead instantly. But if she braved the venomous snake bite, she might have a chance to survive. And since the venom can take a while to kill, it would also buy her more time to think of a way to get help. So as painful and horrible as it would be, that's the option she chose. As Darlene put her hand in the snake's enclosure, it struck her in the thumb, sinking its fangs into her flesh and injecting her with its lethal venom. Glenn took her back inside where she laid on the couch in pain as the venom worked its way through her body. Glenn kept a close eye on her and forbid her to leave the couch. He was waiting out the rest of her life. Miraculously, she made it through to the next morning alive, but not well. She asked Glenn to take her to the hospital, and to her surprise, he agreed. When they started driving into town and not to the hospital, she questioned him on what they were doing, and he claimed they had to run some errands first. He stopped at the video store and instructed Darlene to go inside and return the rented videotapes that they had taken out previously, and she did. I believe they were also going into town, some sources say, to get Glenn more whiskey. I believe they had both been drinking again at this time. She went into the store and handed the woman at the counter the videotapes, and she left again. She didn't say anything to the woman as Glenn had threatened her if she did, and she thought she was on her way to the hospital. Darlene knew that Glenn had a gun, and she didn't want to deviate from his instructions. Glenn then drove them back home, and when Darlene asked about the hospital, he said he never told her he would take her there. The two started to fight again, and by this time in Glenn's life, you know, he was heavily drinking again, and he may have been back in his old ways for a while, so I'm not sure how long up until the snake bite incident that he had been drinking again, but it was said that Glenn had been drinking again. Darlene said Glenn was drunk and angry. Since the first snake bite didn't seem to be killing Darlene, but just making her very sick, he got his gun out again. This time, though, he had her write a suicide note to their son, which that note's going to come back up later. After writing the note, he physically forced her back to the shed with the snakes. By Darlene's account, Glenn grabbed her by the hair and said he was going to force her face in the snake cage so she would get bit on the face if she didn't put her hand in. That is absolutely gruesome to imagine somebody's face being forced into a venomous snake cage to be bit on the face to die. That is straight out of a horror movie. She said she put her hand in the snake cage so she could avoid having her head forcefully put in there. And this was when Glenn made sure the snakes were really angry by hitting the cage with a stick and really aggravating the snake in there. Again, Darlene was bitten by a venomous snake. 2 bites in 2 days was sure to end her life. Darlene was very unwell. Her body was shutting down. She was vomiting and she was losing control of bodily functions, to put it in the most dignified way I can. She was not in a good way at all. Glenn continued to drink and point the gun at Darlene as she lay dying a slow, agonizing death on the couch. Glenn watched her pointing this gun at her, and he was just waiting for her to die. He was waiting for that couch to become her deathbed. Glenn ended up drinking himself into a slumber, aka he drank so much he passed out. And that's when Darlene called her sister to call her an ambulance. Once the call was placed, Darlene snuck out of the house and started stumbling down the road, where she met the emergency services who helped in saving her life. Darlene also says that Glenn admitted to her that she had to die because he wanted to marry a different woman. The reason Glenn couldn't get a divorce was because he may lose his preacher position in the church if he were to do that, because I don't think you can be a preacher if you have a divorce. I don't know. This thinking is kind of strange to me because, you know, Glenn had been married before Darlene to Doris, so I don't really know what's going on here. But that whole situation that Darlene described, it is just absolutely chilling and horrific. It is, you know, bone-chilling testimony, not to mention just an absolutely torturous way to murder somebody. I wanted to know more about rattlesnake bites because I was like, well, she was bit once and then she got sick and then she got bit twice and she lasted, you know, a few more hours before she got out of the house. What's going on with rattlesnake venom? So I looked up how long it takes for that venom to cause death in a human. And I read that if bitten by a rattlesnake, and this is specific to their venom, different serpents have different venom that can kill much quicker or slower or whatever. They're different. But for this particular venom, it can take 2 to 3 days to die from a rattlesnake bite. I thought it was instant. I always thought snake bite deaths were instant. I never thought that it can take 2 to 3 days to die from a rattlesnake bite, but I guess it can. This death, however, would be very long, painful, and horrific as the body's organs start shutting down and failing. It is slow, it is agonizing, it is brutal. It is recommended that if you ever do get bitten by a rattlesnake, you seek help immediately. You seek medical help within 30 minutes is what the internet recommended. But it can take 2 to 3 days to actually die from the venom. Imagine being the jury on this case, listening to this absolutely horrific, horrible attempted murder story. Like, I am sure they were all mortified because many people have a fear of snakes. Many people have a fear of being bitten by venomous snakes. And now here's Darlene telling this absolutely nightmare of an attempted murder involving her being forced to stick her hand in to a cage with a very large, I think it was like a 5-foot-long diamondback rattlesnake that was pissed off and it bit her. It's just so scary. So, okay, they've heard from Darlene. That's Darlene's story. What's Glenn's defense? What is he saying? You know, he can't deny Darlene got bit by a snake. That much is, that's not up for debate. She clearly got bit by a snake. But Glenn's story, it is very different from Darlene's. According to Glenn, he saw Darlene inviting a man into their home for relations previously, before all this stuff went down. He said he was in the bush one day, just casually spying on his house from the woods like you do, and he witnessed Darlene bring a man into the house. He said that he was out in the bush watching his house because God wanted him to see this, and that's why he was spying on his own wife and his own house. Why he didn't intervene, I have no idea, and it that part seems really out of character for him, but this is what he is saying. He also said that Darlene was trying to lure him into violence so she could get him put behind bars. The way she was doing this was through words. And according to Glenn, Darlene started telling him about her affairs with other men in an attempt to bring out his violent side. He said he did not react to this. And then he said that she said something incredibly shocking. Again, according to Glenn, Darlene told him that years earlier she had slept with 2 of his sons from his previous marriage. One of the sons denied this, and the other one didn't deny this, saying that Darlene made them have sex with her. And from what I gather, Glenn's sons would have been underage at this time of the alleged sexual assault. around 12 years old, I read in one article, but I found no further legal matters from this accusation. So whether or not anything happened with that, I'm unsure. If it was found to be false, if it was found to be true, I have no idea what happened with that. Glenn claims he did not lash out at Darlene as she wanted. He said the reason Darlene wanted him in jail was because she was afraid Glenn would take the son that they had together and not let Darlene be a part of their life any longer. And apparently Darlene had a child before the son that they had together, and that child was taken from her. Glenn denies any wrongdoing and that he never ever forced Darlene to get bit. He said he fell asleep, and when he woke up that Saturday night of October 4th, Darlene was gone, and in the house was a suicide note on the table written by her. As for the bite Darlene said she received Friday night, so the first one, Glenn said she did not mention it Saturday morning. He said she told him that she had been bit, but when he looked, he didn't see anything to be worried about. He claims he didn't see a fresh snake bite and she was fine. She wasn't showing any signs of being bitten by one of their snakes. He does mention how they went into town to run some errands, such as return the videotapes, and Darlene was well enough to do so. So he wasn't concerned about her claims of having been bit by one of the church's snakes the night before. The lady who was working at the video store, she testified and said that she did not notice any injuries to Darlene's hand when she was handed back the videotapes, which confirms Glenn's story on the first bite. Glenn, he sticks with his suicide defense. He said she tried to commit suicide, but then another defense is brought up by a 23-year-old woman. This woman tells the jury that Darlene admitted to her that she had gotten bit while trying to kill Glenn as he slept. This young woman may have turned this around for Glenn, except she was discredited once it came out that this 23-year-old woman and Glenn were involved romantically, as evidence surfaced that this woman had spent nights with Glenn in his home and Darlene had no idea. So we have two defenses here. We have one defense saying she tried to kill herself. Here's the suicide note she left. Then we have this 23-year-old woman coming in and saying, Darlene told me that she was trying to kill Glenn and got bit by one of the snakes. So we got two defenses here. So I don't know what's going on at this point. If Darlene was trying to murder Glenn and ended up getting bit herself, then why write a suicide letter? And if Glenn is telling the truth and Darlene was trying to commit suicide, then why did she call her sister to call an ambulance? When that alleged suicide letter was analyzed, it mentioned multiple times that Glenn had no part in what had happened to Darlene and that he didn't know anything that was going on and that he was sleeping the entire time. This seemed very strange to not only the prosecution, but also the jury, and it was decided that Darlene was forced to write that letter by Glenn to stage her willful death, to stage her suicide. And you know, looking at the letter, they thought, well, why does it mention three times that Glenn had nothing to do with this? And they were thinking if she was actually writing a suicide letter, it would be more, and she was writing it to her son. So this letter was written to her son. It would be more about her and her son, not about Glenn not knowing. Glenn's violent past and previous rap sheet did not help his defense in any way, because remember, he had some violent charges against him in his younger days involving assault. Although many people in the community believe Glenn, the jury does not. Glenn Summerford was found guilty of attempted murder and sentenced to 99 years in prison. While doing time, 11 years into his sentence, he got another 30 years added on for an escape, which this escape lasted 45 minutes. He was a free man for 45 minutes, and he was found pretty quickly hiding in a garbage can by police and then arrested again and then slapped with another 30 years. Even though Glenn is found guilty and convicted, there are still people who believe that he is innocent. the members of his former church just could not believe that he could ever do such a thing, which means they all believe Darlene lied to get their preacher locked up. And I am sure that did not go over well for Darlene and her community. There is for sure still mixed feelings about this case in the public's opinion. Just have a Google and you can read some mixed opinions. If you go on YouTube, there's mixed opinions. Some are convinced that the courts ruled correctly and some are not. Darlene did say that she was grateful justice was served. Darlene, she no longer practices serpent handling. That concludes this week's episode. If you want to stay updated with what's happening on the podcast, please find hellno_a true crime podcast on TikTok and or Instagram and give that a follow. Join me next week as we dive into the dark side of life and death.